Thank you for tuning in to yet another episode of I'm Here For It, the podcast. We like to begin our show with a thought for the day. Be like a tree. Stay grounded, keep growing, and know when to let go of things that no longer serve you. And with that being said, I'm your girl, Tori.
And I'm your girl, Trina. We appreciate your time and viewership. When you have thousands of podcasting options, you chose us. And guess what?
We choose you.
Yes. Go on, tree. I like that little saying. I'm feeling all rooted into everything over here. I love that. Well, we have a very interesting show for you guys today. As you can see, our set looks different. We have a very special guest that we're going to chop it up with. This young lady has weathered a storm that half of us can't even imagine experiencing. She's a wife, a mother, a sister, a multiple business owner. Buckle up and hold on tight. Ladies and gentlemen, please welcome someone that I've known for over 20 years, the super resourceful and very talented Miss Raggy. Welcome, Miss Raggy. How are you doing today, lady?
Hi, everyone. Hello.
How are you?
Good. Well, thank you so much for agreeing to sit down and talk with us. I know your story will be one that will help many at the end of the day. So I really appreciate your time. What's the saying? They say each one teach one, right? So
yes. Whatever
you may have walked through or experienced may definitely be a blessing to help someone else navigate through what they may be currently experiencing. So we appreciate you, my sister, so much. And thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you.
Absolutely. Well, we're going to just go ahead and hop on in to our interview this evening. Raggy, if you don't mind, why don't you tell us a little bit about yourself? Did you grow up with both parents? You got siblings, married, got kids? Just give us a little background to our listeners so they'll know who we're talking with today.
Well, I grew up in a two-parent household. I have one sister. I was the baby. And me and my sister, we got along really good. So we were raised as Jehovah Witnesses. So we were, you know, like it was kind of like structured.
So pretty much following the Jehovah Witness way, you guys would go to the hall every Saturday.
We couldn't hang out. We couldn't do anything. So, you know, that's how my mother was. My dad wasn't a witness, but my mom was. So she tried to structure us like that. Then I went on and I got married. And that one didn't work out. But then, you know, everything, you know, I had three kids, beautiful kids. But life just took a turn and in the middle of my structure.
In the middle of your structure.
Yes.
Now, saying that, when you say structure, I automatically think of not strict, but maybe strict, a lot of rules trying to keep you away from trouble by providing you this structured schedule that you have to follow.
Yeah.
Sounds like that's exactly what you were, you know, you grew up under. But then having that structure and having both parents, how did you end up taking a role to that led you to incarceration? What happened with seeing that you did come from that two-parent household? What happened that led you down that road?
Well, being in a household like that, we weren't allowed to do a lot of things. So I was able to get out in them streets and experience things. So with me experiencing things, it became the get money type girl. So that's what I got into. I got into the wrong crowd. And once you get into that crowd, good doesn't rub off on bad. It rubs off the wrong way. So I got in, you know, to that crowd.
Yeah. Well, that's a good one. Good doesn't rub off on bad. But bad sure in the heck will influence good, won't it?
Yeah, but you can't keep your kids from stuff. They're going to have to learn. And that's what I did. I learned.
Yeah. And by I know growing up, when we grew up, South Central Los Angeles in the 80s and the 90s, it was like, for me personally, everywhere I went, it was ballers everywhere. And they had this car and they had these clothes and their girlfriends always had this and that. And don't let you have an older boyfriend and he picking you up from school in his nice low rider and you looking like you balling at school and everything to your friends. So I know it's definitely hard to get kind of like caught up in that life.
Once you get into the lifestyle, when you say it's just no turning back. So it becomes more and more. And then it becomes like a hobby. So you just think that this is your hobby, this is your craft, I'm good at what I do, and it's no turning back after that.
Well, can you explain to our listeners, like, I mean, what were you getting into? Could you go into a little bit more detail? Because, I mean, I don't know the story. Could you tell a little, go into a little bit more depth with the story? Was it your friends or was it more your boyfriend that got you to, you know, where you went down the wrong road? Or
it was more friends. It became just hustling. It started off with real estate, then it went into cars. And then when we got into cars, it was just titles. And that became, you know, even more crazy. So it was a whole lot of different things. Whatever came to the boat, that's what I was on.
Oh, wow. That's interesting. Because, you know, I'm sorry. I'm glad you elaborated on that, because I was thinking, you know, back in the day, you know, there was a lot more of the drug game going on. I didn't realize there was real estate and cars and everything like that going on in South Central LA.
Yeah.
So, okay. Interesting. Can you tell me how long did you end up going away, and how did it go that far? You know, if you don't mind me asking a little bit more.
Well, you know, sometimes when you're doing stuff and it goes good for some, it doesn't go good for all. So, you know, once you piss somebody off, that's when they will call the police on you, and then they'll set up an investigation because somebody got hurt. And then in the company that we were with, it didn't foresay it was me, but I'm just saying, I allowed myself to get in with these people. And being from LA, we follow a street code, and it's like, you don't tell on nobody. Mm-hmm. So that's what I did. I took the ride. And the judge, he said he was going to make an example out of me because I wouldn't, you know, tell. So I was like, well, let me just do this little vacation so that, you know, because I'm not going to do that.
Right.
So, at first, we had 96 counts. And then it ended up being 4 counts, ran concurrent. So I had... it was 2 years each count. So I ended up doing 13 months.
13 months. Okay. Yeah.
So he was like, if you don't take the time today, the feds will pick you up. So I was like, let me take my time and just let me go on. So.
Wow.
Now, when you said y'all had 96 counts, Raggy, 96 counts of like what? Like, of what?
It was grand theft. They had real estate fraud charges. They had so many charges in there. It, you know, with me being never getting in trouble, I almost fell out because they came and picked me up at the shop when I was working. And I was like, well, wow. I'm going to get out of this. I'm going to get out of this. And, you know, the police officer, he kind of like laughed at me. He's like, I don't think you will, because they'll need a city block for you. So my bail was $2.7 million.
$2.7 million.
That's what the total of the damages was. Yeah.
And here you are, this young lady from this two-parent household. Mama got a business working and grinding. You in the shop with her. She got no clue of what's going on.
And you got this
enormous bail.
Yes.
And how old were you at the time?
I should have been 30 at that time.
Wow, that's a lot.
Yes, Raggy. And like you said, we do come from the era of the snitches get stitches. So yeah. Unfortunately, you know, we just roll with whatever, you know, like you said, you took the ride. During that time when you were down, how did you cope? Were there like programs that you could kind of like get into to reduce your time or better yourself? So when you're released, you're like more of an asset, which you definitely are in all aspects to society. Or what did you do during your time in being incarcerated?
Well, when I got there, like I said, I was devastated because I came from a household and then I'm going into The Walking Dead. So they put me at not CIW where, you know, it was just like Prissy prison. They sent me to Chowchilla. So I'm there and I'm like, oh my God, this is reality. Like, okay. So a lifer told me, she was like, listen, don't think about the outside. You're going to have to think about the inside and get yourself together. So upon getting there, it took me like about 2 weeks to just kind of focus because it was so much going on. It was fights, it was stabbings, it was everything going on. So that was out of my element. I'm like, I know I'm from the streets, but this ain't street right here. This is just crazy.
This is barbaric. Yeah, like, what is right. going on?
Yeah. So I had to kind of place myself in that situation. So if, you know, me being in prison, trying to place yourself in this situation where I had to adapt to. So I was just like, okay, I'm finna do this prison thing. So I put myself there and I worked out. I read books. My sister and my mother, they stayed down with me. My kids, I talked to them every Sunday. But I had to reprogram myself in order to try to adapt to this new life for 13 months.
Who kept your kids while you were in prison, and how was the relationship with them, you know, with you being behind bars for those 13 months?
My sister and my mom kept my kids. My sister, shout out my sister, that's my best friend. Like, she kept my kids like she was their mother. My relationship with my kids, I felt like I had to go through a lot in order to get a relationship back with them. So I had to step back and let my sister be the parent because that's who they ran to when I wasn't there. So I had to respect the fact that she was the parent and I was coming back into their world.
That's hurtful, I'm sure.
Yeah. Not really, once you take accountability. So that's my favorite word, accountability. Like, I allowed this to happen, so I'm going to let her be the parent. And when they get comfortable with me, then I'll be here when they come.
And how did that work out? Did they turn around quickly or was it slowly? How did that work out?
With some kids, because I have three, with some kids it took years. With some kids it took maybe a year. And then my baby, I was able to get back with him because I left him when he was 9 months. So it was more easier to get back with him, but I had to gain trust and a relationship with my other kids.
I have another question about that. Before you went in, did you have a good relationship with them, or were you in the streets a lot, or did that play a role with it?
I thought with I had your, a good relationship with my kids, but it was all about things. It wasn't time.
Gotcha.
It was things. So being with things, I felt like that was love. So, you know, if I can take you and buy you this, you love me. But no, they really wanted to be with me.
One at the time. Absolutely. And not the material things. Yeah. Wow, Raggy. Now I know that walking down this road, you probably met some incredible women, because everybody that's locked up, men or women, aren't necessarily bad people. They just made some wrong decisions, right?
Yes.
So during your downtime, did you happen to create any relationships that you still keep up with, or are you kind of like out of sight, out of mind? That was my old life. I'm moving forward. Is anybody you still, you know,
I'm very active. I'm very active in prison with other people. Like, I really devote a lot of time because it's a lost place where people get lost all the time. Family members don't check on you. They lose their kids. It's so much that goes on. I learned, like, you know, even with women have the hardest time. And I tried to adapt myself to those women and see, like, I felt like me going to prison, it was a wake-up call, and it was something that I needed. And it was better than a college experience because I got to see life at two sides and then come back and try to redeem myself and make myself better, which some people really don't get a chance to do that.
Right. Right, right.
But now I met some deep. Awesome people. I met some awesome people. I met some awesome business owners that structured me. We worked out. I lost 70 pounds when I was in prison. I worked out. I read books. I met this one lifer in prison. And at first I was going to mope. And she was like, you know, come with me to these AA classes. I was like, I don't do drugs. And she's like, yeah, but you got some type of problem. It ain't all about drugs, something you addicted to. And that's when I was like, you know what? For real. So that's when I went with her to AA and I learned steps of getting yourself back together and regrouping yourself and starting all over. Because there's nothing wrong with starting all over.
Absolutely. Absolutely. You can't get stuck in the, oh my goodness, I made this mistake. Now my life is just over. You have to make those steps to dig yourself out of that hole. And you said something, you just said that your experience was even better than a college experience.
What
do you think would be the difference in between the college experience versus the route that you chose?
Just going to prison and seeing some of the things and some of the things that women go through, domestic violence, of killing their husbands, getting into gangs, getting into the wrong crowd, just like it was a life experience. And, you know, just going and hearing the stories and just, you know, just looking at it from another view, like you wouldn't even look at it from where we are, because it's called behind the wall. And it really is behind the wall. It's a whole nother world in prison. And that's why I say when I learned so much and I read so much, I got in the library with the lifers and looked at some of the cases. That's when I took the program in there to start my paralegal, because I wanted to help women get out. You know, some women, my first experience of working in the greens, my bunkie, she was in there since 1967 and she never used a microwave. And they were looking at it like it was like so obsolete. And I'm like, you just push this button and come on. And they were just like, a light came on. So it was so much that had went on. And I was like, dang, you got so much to be grateful for. And you just was on the street and just messing up. And then I looked at, you know, people always say, do you have your kids? And I'm like, they're home with my mom. And some of those women were like, I don't have my kids. I don't even know where they are. And that touched me because I was just like, oh my God. And I got my kids. It was a blessing because I still was able to talk to my kids. I still had them. And other people didn't. So I seen my life flash and I was like, you got to do better. You just got to do better. You got to get new friends. You can't keep hanging around the same people if you're going to change.
Absolutely. Yeah. If they say if you want change, you have to do something that you weren't doing to receive that change that you're looking for.
Accountability.
So, man, that. Yeah. Yeah. Absolutely. Absolutely.
Right, yeah. Accountability. What book would you tell women to read, you know, that may feel like their lives are hopeless right now? I know you said you did a lot of reading while you were in prison. Was there a book that stood out to you that you felt really helped you? Is there?
My favorite book is 48 Laws of Power. Okay. I love the guerrilla mindset. I can go on. I have so many other books. I just can't think of them right offhand. But 48 Laws of Power teaches you how to structure yourself and not be in the mix of everything. You can be from a distance and still be in that wherever you want to be at. You just have to change some things. So if you selling drugs, sell hair and be the best hair dealer there is. You know, it just teaches you how to reverse things and make it into a positive thing. And that's what I did. I was just like, each day I would read a law after I work out. I definitely read my Bible. That was my one and only thing, because that's the only one that stuck by me. Not to mention that when I went to Chowchilla, you know, you get this, you're supposed to get this physical. So during my physical there, it was a possibility that I could have cancer. Okay?
Yeah.
So going on and on and on and on, I went through it. I didn't tell my mom because I didn't want my mom to worry. And I definitely didn't want the kids to worry. But it came that I went and had surgery. I guess I was cured. But if you look into California, they had this thing where they were labeling that everyone had like a type of ovarian thing on the yard. But what they were doing was they were sterilizing us. And I was a part of that. So I was sterilized while in prison. But they said it was, you know, we all had cancer. And it was so ironic that everybody on the yard had the same disease. But, you know, it just came out. And then when I got home 10 years later, you know, CDC was calling like, you know, you could be in the class action suit because they were sterilizing you guys. And they had been sterilizing women since 2000. So it could have damaged me, but I didn't let it get to me.
Oh my God. So did they
did not did
they
know
have
that.
You, yeah. Did they have you to go through like the chemo and all of that? The normal regimen of a cancer patient? Is that probably well,
they
what
did
caused
like
you guys
a
to
surgery.
Be sterile?
They did like a surgery on me. And then they were like, it was so fast because the doctor was like, okay, you're good. And I'm like, he's like, you know, it's probably because, you know, when women go to prison, they normally don't, you know, get checked out because they're just running the streets. But that wasn't with me. I just had a baby. So my doctor delivered all my babies. So when I call my doctor, I'm like, look, they said that I might have like HPV. And he's like, well, you didn't have that when you were, you know, here. He said, go through everything that they want you to do just in case. And then when you get home, we'll follow up. But then when I got home and we followed up, it wasn't nothing. But then that's when I got this, you know, they had this big thing in the paper and these women got together and they, you know, went through the whole thing. And we're in court litigation right now. Because they sterilized us. So, you know, that is a major thing too. But I didn't let that overcome me.
Which going through something, first of all, going from your normal lifestyle to this whole new world of being incarcerated and now to pretty much being told that you have cancer, that is insane. That's a lot to deal with. That would have broke a lot of people, right? You know,
it was a lot
of people wouldn't have been to walk in your shoes. So if you would have any advice to tell your younger self, or if not your younger self, a young lady that may be walking in the same direction in which you were walking back then, be it any type of fraud, any type of drugs, any type of, you know, it's so much stuff going on in the world in different ways that people are getting money. If you were able to tell a young lady, or like I said, your younger self, what not to do or how to move, what type of advice would you have for them? Or even a person that may be already, you know, actually living it, what you live through.
It's really not worth it. It's really not worth it. It's not worth you losing a relationship with your kids. It's not worth you leaving your family. It's not worth, it's no money. Nothing amounts to that. It's not even worth it. Like the money, it's not even worth it. Like if you value your relationship, because getting to get back to your kids and doing all types of things like that, family things, family oriented things. It's so much more. Like, I enjoy cooking with my kids. I enjoy just sitting and talking to them. But when you're in the streets and you're making that money, you don't think about that. You're like, I'm going to buy them the new this and that. And you think that they're going to be happy. But they don't tell you that they don't want that stuff. But they be yearning out for you. And you just don't see it because you clocking money. And once you stop and you sit down and you hear those conversations from the global telling, and you're like, dang. And they were like, when you coming home? Or what you doing? You know, are you okay? Me and my oldest son, we went through so much together because he was with me all the time. So he's seen everything. And that was the relationship that I ruined. But we are so tight and we have an understanding. And he understands what all I went through. And I had to break him back because he became that person that I was, and I had to just like, you know, you got to watch how you walk because they looking at you and they'll try to walk that same because they be like, I'm going to do what you, you know, and it's like, that's not even cool. You know, it's okay to be a normal person and work. And that's what you have to show these kids. Like, you have to set the example and just sit back.
Let it all unfold. And I definitely love the part where you said, hey, if you were a good hustler in the streets, you were a good drug seller. Now flip it. Now you can sell hair. Now you can sell clothes. Now you can sell shoes.
Yeah.
It's so many ways that you can take that knowledge and that game and just turn it into something legit that's zero penitentiary chances and still get money.
And see, what society tells us is when you go to prison, you can't do nothing. So they make you feel like after you come from prison, it's nothing that you can do. That's a lie. It's so much stuff that you can do. You can put yourself in any situation and don't let nobody tell you no, because you know is not an option. If they tell you no, you go somewhere else and you another door will open. Don't never not look for that closed door. Always walk through, knock on it, or create your own door. Because in this world now, you don't even have to have that corporate job or anything. You could create your own lane and fly in it. That's all you have to do. And with some women, they just feel like they lost everything. You can't feel like that. You fall down 9 times, you got to get up 10. And you got to keep getting up. And you can't feel sorry for yourself. You can't have that pity part.
Okay.
Yeah. And that's good advice for me too, because I, even over these past few years, I stepped out on faith, did a couple of business ventures. They didn't all work out. And to me, I can't even lie. I was kind of like devastated for a minute. Like, wait a minute. I put my everything into this, but you can never look at it like a loss. It's just a lesson of how to move when you get back on your feet to go forward. Or if you choose to rebrand the business and move in another direction, you just take those what looks like losses as lessons and just grow from that. But it's easier said than done. Yeah,
that's
sometimes it's easier said than done because you'll let yourself get in that funk and you'll be like, oh Lord, you sit in too long and you start to stink. You can't sit in it too long.
You got 5 emotional minutes to cry. The rest, you get up and you put your big girl drawers on and get back to it.
I love that. I love that saying. We'll be using that on this show.
Absolutely.
You have 5 emotional minutes to cry.
Get it together.
Love it.
And get on to whatever is next. And get on, move forward. Did you have a question for
you? So, yes, I do. How did you bounce back from these life experiences, and what does your life look like currently? What are you doing? I know Trina knows, but I don't know. I just heard you're a paralegal. I know you do hair. Do you own a salon?
Yeah.
How did you bounce back after you got out of prison? What'd you do?
Well, after I got out of prison, you know, my mom, she had the salon for 50 years. So my mom was my rock. She's like, you gonna pray and you gonna put him first and whatever you want, it's going to come back to you. And I lost everything. When I say I lost all my bags, all my shoes, everything. I had nothing. My sister, she took me to the mall, got me some outfits, and I got back in the salon. And I built my business one customer at a time. And I sat there and I stayed there. And I cut off all communication to anybody that was doing anything. I but no communication. I didn't go nowhere. I was on parole. So I definitely wasn't trying to get back out there. So I just cut off all communication. I sat in that shop and I worked my butt off. And one by one, I was able to redeem myself for certain things. I went and I did my real estate. And at first I lied on the application and they said, you know, with felony, I know. And they denied me. And then I came back and I told the truth and they approved me. So each step I did, that's why I say don't take no for an answer, because not lying will get you in the door to whatever you want to. It's all about trust. So each step that I went, I just kept going and just kept going. I have a project called Alma's House, because my mom, she was the type of person that helped everybody. And that's my thing for when women get out of prison, we don't have the proper books. Like, they don't have books in prison like the men do. So I collect books and send them to the prison. I have dress out clothes. We feed anybody that comes on certain days. We do that. Just a whole list of things, just trying to give back to the community for people that just don't have anybody, especially the lifers. They've been in there for so long. They done lost all their family. So we try to give them a new start. And that's just a part of the project with, you know, giving back to the prison, because I'm never going to turn my back on this.
And that's good to know. I didn't realize they didn't have books in prison. I thought that you could get your education in prison and things like that. I've heard that you could. So I would think that they had books and a library. And I saw Shawshank Redemption. I know they had it in the men's prison, but the women don't.
Different from the men's. The men's, they will fight and they will do hunger strikes. Women, they won't go without their curling irons. So it's much different. The women are forgotten. And the men, they get to get their stuff because they fight for their stuff. They'll sit up and go on a 2-week hunger strike, where women, it's like we can 10 women could get together and we're going to do it. But after a while, it's going to be like, no, I don't feel like I'm hungry. So they don't do it like that. You know? And it's like they don't tell you. It's only what you see. But when you actually get there and actually see, like, they don't have a lot of stuff, so you have to donate that stuff. And then, you know, some people, family just really gave up on them. So they don't have dress out clothes when they come. They have indigent. So they don't really have anything. So that's where my focus was with helping women like that. And then just coming home and just, you know, talking to the young people, because, you know, young people be like, girl, you was doing it. That's not nothing. But being an inspiration and not showing them, like, it's another way to this. You can actually do something. But it's just, you have to have that motivating force behind you. And it's not a lot of positive things in the hood. Because you got 10 people that'll be like, girl, go cash these checks. Because that's what they want you to do for them, to keep up their household. Mm-hmm. But they're not telling these young people that you can go out here and you can do this. You can start your own business. Nobody want to tell these young people to start their own business. They want them to work for them or do something for them. It's not enough. So I just felt like what I could share, I'm going to bring it back to my neighborhood. And that's what I did. So I love it. It has gotten me in the door to many things. And I'm going to continue to do it.
Well, you definitely got our support from the I'm Here For podcast. You let us know if there's anything that you're collecting or, you know, you donating towards or whatever. And I definitely want to see if we could be a part of that, because again, each one teach one. And if you've already walked down the road, I know sometimes kids could be hard-headed and we have to bump our heads and kind of learn from our own mistakes. But at the same time, if you're somebody that's already walked down that road, you may be able to reach people that me, myself personally, wouldn't be able to reach. So right. Whatever I could do, you know, to lend a helping hand or donation or whatever, please don't hesitate to let us know, because it takes a village. And that's just so sad for, like you said, the lifers. Their family and friends just literally walk away from them. And it's almost like they're buried alive. People just forget about them.
It's the living dead is what I call it.
Wow. Rocky, I know you have your network there in California, but have you reached outside of California to, like, I'm here in Georgia. Is there any way that I could reach out and send books or clothes to people in Georgia? Or, I mean, how does that work? Do you have to know somebody?
No, all you have to do is just get with the prison administration and just get in there. You could go through the ministries. They have all kind of sectors. Just getting in there. It started with a nonprofit and then just, you know, giving back to that and going to the prisons, being a resource. You can go to the county building and reach to those people that just come home. And it's all kind of ways that you can do it. But you could go to the correction Department of Corrections in Georgia and do it. You know, it's so many ways. Start an Atlanta chapter. It's just so many things, because we take for granted what we have and what other people don't.
We really do. Like, a lot of us, we go and we collect all these clothes and things like that, and we give them to the Goodwill, and the Goodwill goes and sell them. Yeah. And I never thought that you can give clothes to the women that are in prison or give books to people in prison. Cause I mean, I like to read myself, so I really would like to donate to the women in prison as well. I had no idea they were going through this.
For dress out clothes, because, you know, it's like, it's made a mockery, especially when some women, you got some women that come home and you got some COs that might give them. I was fortunate enough to have a dress out package when I came home, but it was another girl, my sister, she had bought me two outfits because I lost so much weight. She didn't know, you know, but they had gave this girl like some two little pants and two little shirt. And, you know, it was funny to them. And that hurt my heart, because it was like, you know, and then they were like, you know, see you later. Like, they knew you were coming back. Oh, and wow. If a woman hears that, that's what she's going to think. And that's all she knows. And to be humiliated like that, it's just crazy. So I try my best to do my best and do more for women incarcerated. Whenever I hear somebody incarcerated, I'm like, what they need? Let's get together and let's get that package. You know, let's make the time. Let's write that letter. Let's write those letters. Let's send those stamps. Let's get together and let's make sure she had that box, because that's important. It's very important
for their sanity, if nothing else, just to know that there's still somebody that cares about them.
Just to know that somebody really loves me, because you find out who love you and who don't when you go to prison.
Oh, you absolutely will. I'm sure
you find out
all them friends that was with you when you had it and you was balling and y'all was on Crenshaw turfed up. It was a bunch of them.
It's a good thing, because that's a part of your redemption, to get away from it, because God did his job and he took you away from them and let you see what you really needed. And that's why I say it was the best college experience I ever had.
Oh, man. Well, I know that this episode is definitely going to be one for the books, honey, and it is going to help a young lady that may be, you know, choosing the wrong way right now. Maybe it'll help turn her around and know that, hey, this did happen, but you're still, you know, in the situation where you can turn yourself around and you don't have to walk down this road. But if you do choose to walk down the road, then know this. This is what the outcome could be. You don't have to just sit and waddle in it. Accept your mistake. Have accountability, like you said, Rocky. know what you did and know how to move forward, because one mistake does not define you. You just have to keep moving forward.
And this is what I really want to say to our listeners. Like, as women, we have to uplift each other. We have to stay doing that. When you see your sister falling, don't laugh. They're going through something. Help them. Give them a word. Say something to your sister. And it's not your physical sister. I'm talking about our sisters. We have to help each other and stay together. Because in a world that's meant to break us, it's easy to get broken. But keep saying something positive. If you see somebody look down, say something to her. You never know. She might be on that verge of jumping. You never know what somebody is going through. And that's where I learned to really look deep into people and just understand, like, everybody go through something. So when I could have been in prison and been like, oh, girl, I am so sad. And I'm in prison, It wasn't about me no more. Because, look, you did this. And that's the accountability. Now, let's see what we're going to grow from this. And that's why I say we got to be positive in each other's lives. Don't talk about nobody. Don't, you know, spreading gossip. Just women uplift women. We could be so much better.
So powerful.
Have to agree.
So powerful. Forces to be reckoned with once we all come together.
Yes.
It's when we're on that divided stuff or afraid that the one person may have more than what we have is when we kind of like lose focus as to what we should, you know.
And you can't let a man take you under, even though sometimes that's what we get into, but you have to keep going. That man might not be for you. You know, I lost a husband. Hey, sometimes you got to be by yourself in order to know. Like I told you, Trina, when I didn't know what color I loved. You know, when I got to prison, I found out what color I loved. I found out flowers bloom. I found out so many things about myself. I was just like, dang, girl, you really? And that's when you just really got to love yourself, because that's what we're not taught, to love ourselves. And that's why we keep doing the things that we do, you know, because we're making money and that's blocking out what we really need to learn. So I found out a whole lot of things about myself, just loving myself and getting back to normal, getting back to Raggy, getting back to, you know, just doing what I do. So I had to, you know, love myself. I found out I love purple. I found out, you know, I like taking walks by myself. I just found out so many things about myself. So it was an experience, and I loved walking through it. I wouldn't have done the crime anymore, but the experience of going to prison and actually learning, it was the best college experience I had.
It sounds like you were set down when you were supposed to be set down and experience what you were supposed to experience all the time, why God continued to cover you, protect you.
Yes.
And keep your loved ones in your life and keep your children in your life and never allowed you to lose hope.
Yes.
And yeah, and that's such an easy thing to do. I'm not going to say easy thing to do, but when you have that support system that won't let you give up on yourself, man, I can only imagine that means so much, opposed to women who just don't have anybody.
Yes.
Why wouldn't you give up? Because who are you living for? It's like, and you probably don't even know yourself. So, oh man, you walked down the road, sister. I am very proud of you, because now, multiple business owner, got her own hair salon, into beauty and hair care. So if anybody is out in Los Angeles or wherever, it don't matter. If you're looking for somebody to get your hair right, you got natural hair, good condition, keep them ends on point, keep that hair growing, contact our girl. We're going to make sure that we put all of her social medias out for you guys, so you can reach out to her if you want to. And with that being said, Raggy, what are your social medias? If somebody wanted to reach out to you, if a young lady sees this show today, how can they reach out to you to further the conversation if need be?
I'm on Beautyrama Hair Studio. That's my Instagram. But I really don't do a lot of social media or my email, or you can give out my phone number, and my number is always available. I'm a more talkative person and more contact. I just think social media is just too much, and it puts a damper on who we really are. And I just want to let you see the realness in my voice and actually talk to me.
That personal interaction. Yeah, that personal interaction. We are definitely missing it with everybody communicating via text or social media. So we appreciate that. Well, we will put out your social media for those who may be afraid to contact you directly, in addition to your email and everything, so that we can get, if hopefully more clientele for you. Come get your hair did. She don't play. She gonna grow you right. Or if, like, again, if you just need a big sister to talk to, you may be going through something that she's already walked through. She's opening up the doors for you guys to communicate. So we definitely appreciate you, Raggy, for joining us today and having this wonderful conversation with us. I learned so much,
Me too. It's been very inspirational.
Yeah, very informative. And just to see you go from where you were to where you are now. I mean, I'm just blessed to be a part of the journey and to have known you for this long amount of time, and to know your family, your sister, Rhonda, beautiful inside and out, Miss Alma. Man, she was all of our mama. So to see you walk through everything that you walked through with her, which we may have to bring you back for another episode of just dealing with family members with dementia, because I know that was a whole nother road that you walked. Yeah. Dealing with your mom for so many years. So yeah. I know that there are plenty of people that could probably benefit from hearing your experience again and how you dealt with that, and maybe resources that you accumulated along the way. So we may have to bring you back for that.
Yeah, I'm actually writing a book for caregivers. It's like a memoir to my caregivers, and just you reaching out and just being a source for caregivers. And people with family members with dementia.
Raggy, you sound like an amazing woman, I tell you.
Thank you.
That she is. That she is. Very goal-oriented. And she's going to get it done. Whatever she says she's going to do, she does it. She does it.
That's a blessing. So, yeah, well,
Tori, why don't you go ahead and take us on out of here then?
Well, thank you for joining us with another episode of I'm Here For It, the podcast. Remember to hit that like and subscribe button. You can find us on YouTube, TikTok, Facebook, Instagram, and now you can find us anywhere that you listen to your audio podcast. So check us out on Spotify, you name it, we are there. Apple and Amazon Music. Yes. Absolutely. So each week we will be bringing engaging topics, always addictive and never scripted. So until next time, keep coming back for more. I'm Here For It podcast.
Bye. Good night. Have a good night. Thank you. Segment is sponsored by Tori Styles LLC, your source for inspirational-based products. Explore prayer books, journals, coffee mugs, stylish t-shirts, and customizable items for the small business owner. Visit www.toristyles.com.